We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Folks, it's the midweek edition of College Sports Now. We got a lot to get to. I would say not a lot of time, but we do have Wayne Cook, so we're going to go for as long as Cookie wants to go. That's pretty much how this rolls. And Wayne's alma mater is 4-0. They're hosting a top 20 team at the Rose Bowl on Friday night. It's a big deal. I'm not sure, Wayne, how many tickets you guys have sold for the Rose Bowl, because the first three games have been somewhat sparsely populated. We got Michael Serber hanging out as well. Phil Steele stopping by in about 25 minutes. Usually that's a half hour into the show, but your boy here is running a couple minutes late, so I apologize. But Wayno, how are you living, man? How are things? How was Boulder?
Boulder's always awesome. Are you kidding me? I mean, like you know, I know you're throwing a little shade in there because you like to poke the bear a little bit and get me fired up, but like, you know, UCLA's first three games were against opponents that maybe the uneducated fan doesn't know who South Alabama is, who may make a run in the Sun Belt this year. You don't know.
We heard it here, folks. Wayne Cook calls UCLA fans dumb and uneducated.
Not what I said at all, but the idea that some people are questioning that. And, yeah, some UCLA fans should have known better. That was a really good football game. It would have been really fun at the end to hear 40, 50, 60,000 people cheering at a walk-off field goal to end the game, because I'm going to tell you guys, South Alabama's pretty legit. I don't know how many people in the Sun Belt are going to want to go through them, so it'll be fun to watch. But either way, it doesn't matter, because guess what's coming up? Washington, Utah, Oregon. So, you know, as Phil would say, we're going to find out. This is all going to work itself out. So for UCLA, Friday night game, a lot of eyes will be on for those who are willing to stay up late and watch some football on a Friday night. I'm excited because Washington's really good. UCLA's really good. And so, you know what? There's great games this weekend, you guys. It's an awesome schedule. So this is good. We're getting into where we start really learning, because let's be honest, have we been wrong about a lot of teams?
No.
Up till now?
No.
We haven't been wrong about
anything? No, I haven't missed yet. No. Or I'm a month into the season and I'm batting 1,000.
So, okay. So you
hang on.
Got...
Wait. No, Wayne, you're going to...
Yeah.
You have not heard him on the ACC show. You will let him off the hook here. You were all in on Miami. You were like, Miami is the bee's knees, and they
how
are
many,
two
hey,
and
hey,
two.
Hey, Server, how many ACC games has Miami lost?
Bro.
Zero.
Don't. No. You can't hedge your bet like that. You said they were the real deal. Competing for a playoff. You said Miami could go to a playoff.
Wow.
You said that. And you
Maybe
were
you picked
wrong,
the wrong
sir.
Florida stool. Maybe you should switch over to Florida State.
I admit that I might have been premature in my Miami ACC selection, but at no point, sir, did I say that they were college football playoff good. Not in the field of four, maybe in the field of 12 in a couple of years, but not right now. They're not ready. They're not very good. Listen, before it's all said and done,
wow.
He doesn't listen to me. What did I tell you about Mario, by the way? Did I tell you to tap the brakes a little bit?
A lot of folks in South Florida are realizing that Mario Cristobal, as a game manager and as a guy who, you know, is supposed to be in charge of NFL quarterbacks, who wants to play quarterback in that system? Yeah, listen, you're not wrong. There are a couple other programs in the top 10 right now that I got my eye on. We're going to talk to Phil Steele about some of these games. Phil's got computers. He's running simulations. Guys, I don't know how good Michigan is. I really don't. Like, I don't think they're
exceptional. They won a good game, though. Maryland's pretty good, though, right?
So they won a game over Maryland by 7 points. Did you see what happened on the very first play of that game?
Well, if you're going to go there, then why is SC at six when they take on an Oregon State team that's unranked, that should have been ranked, and only scored 17?
I'm going in chronological order here. I started with number four. Do you know what the turnover margin is for USC through four games, Wayne?
I don't.
It's plus 14.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot. They get a lot of turnover. Well, dude, Chance Nolan threw like four picks, and they only lost by three.
USC, through 16 quarters of football this year, has yet to commit a turnover, okay?
Wow.
I'm going to tell you guys something who may or may not follow football, college or pro. That's not sustainable, okay? Kudos on them. They had three pick sixes against Rice. They knocked Jake Haner out of the Fresno State game. They had Stanford commit four turnovers in the red zone, including two inside the five-yard line. And to Wayne's point, they picked off the Oregon State quarterback four times in Corvallis. Caleb Williams, on the road. How did that performance look for the first 59 minutes or so? Not great.
Do you remember when Coach Lincoln Riley kind of almost like oddly was like, we need to tap the brakes on Caleb? Like, you know, he was good. He does some amazing things, but he's still got a lot to work on. This was interesting to me because I was looking at some Heisman odds, and I saw that Caleb was still at like 6-1. And I'm like, he threw for under 50% on the road. Like, threw for under 50%. He was like, he had 20 incompletions. Like, when you're competing for a Heisman, I'm not saying you can't have a bad game, but that was their first real test, correct? Where they actually went up against a team that actually could play some football. And so, you know, to me, I would argue that Dorian Thompson-Robinson has, you know, he threw for 82-point-something% this weekend, granted against Colorado, but he has been, I mean, almost 80% on the year. That's four games. That's hard to do against air. And he's also rushing for a ton of yards. And so I sometimes wonder how people come up with all this stuff. But can I go even higher, Stephen?
Sure.
Why is Ohio State not ahead of Alabama? That Alabama barely win against Texas, their only real true game so far, really doesn't look that good.
Could I not say the same thing about Ohio State's barely win against a 2-2 Notre Dame team?
Yeah, I mean, you could. I would argue that Notre Dame and Texas are very similar, but Ohio State's got another big win. They've got another Power 5 win. So, my whole point to this, as you said that, I would argue, and let's have some fun with this because this is the kind of stuff that really doesn't matter right now, and we all know that. But why is USC ranked ahead of Washington? Why is USC at 6 when Washington's at 15? Go ahead and compare their numbers. I know we all know that Michigan State's not nearly as good as we thought they were, but who decides this stuff?
Well,
like who decides? Florida, you know, the 3-1 Utah team, we all went into the season thinking Utah was good, but now we know that Florida's maybe not anything special. Like, why is Penn State sitting there, you know, at 11? Maybe their record's proven that they should be higher. Tennessee is 4-0. I know they haven't. I mean, there's so many different things that you could go into. You poked me this week and said that JMU has gotten more votes than UCLA, and UCLA's 4-0. I don't really lose any sleep over that because UCLA has played a weak schedule. But still, like, it's all make-believe at this point. We all try to figure out who we think's good and not good based on how they recruit and how they were in previous years, when in reality what we should be looking at is who they've played this year. And even if you're a really good team with a really good brand and everybody knows who you are, you're a blue blood and you played in the championship last year, if you haven't played anybody yet, it should show that in the rankings. Like, and if you've played a couple of really difficult teams, I mean, I wrote some of this stuff down. I mean, even Florida State's played at and I know you're going to tell me they're not very good, but they've played at LSU and at Louisville. Those are real Power 5 opponents early in a season.
Sure.
And you win those games, and when you compare some of these schedules to other teams, I'm like, some of these teams that are ranked down quite a bit are being judged based on what they were in previous years. If you're Kansas and you're sitting there at 4-0 and you've played as well as they've played, are you thinking maybe we belong in the top 25? I mean, there's just so many different things that you can learn. By the way, they have the according to the QBR stats, they have the best quarterback in the country at Kansas right now. So, I mean, it's just – but no one's going to say that because, like, no, because there's Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, and I get it. But there are some players out there that are really good on some of these teams that for whatever reason we just don't entirely respect.
So the beauty of all this, Wayne, is – and I know you like to make Sunday comparisons, which, I mean, it's a completely different sport. I don't watch it. I don't follow it. And I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. Right. But, you know, you got 17 weeks in the pros. In college, we're a third of the way through the season, man. We got four games in the. Think about that. Unless you're Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia, I mean, you're only getting 12 games. Like, you're a third of the way through the season, so I don't have the luxury to sit back and wait until October before I make judgments about your program. That being said, Wayne, you've got, according to the numbers, the nation's leading passer coming into your building on Friday night, man. Listen, we joke, and I love to get you triggered. Yes, I sent you a tweet about JMU receiving more votes than UCLA in the AP Top 25 poll. That's a real thing. I didn't make that up. That actually happened.
Yep.
But, you know, Washington's coming in as the number 15 team in the land. UCLA 4-0 for the first time since when, Wayne? It's been a while, right?
Don't forget the Jim Mora era, is that right? We ended with three last year, so we've had seven straight wins. So this team has definitely like learned how to win football games.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. You're a home Hey, Wayne, congratulations, buddy. You're a home underdog on Friday night. None of that matters.
Is it three?
I'm sorry?
Is it at three still?
The line is hovering around three and a half. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. That means it's a pretty even game, which is what it should be. So just so you guys know, and I'm going to do it again, the Pac-12 is going to have a lot of these games all year. They're going to have a ton of games. I don't care who you're playing, barring, and you can throw out Colorado because I just watched them play and they're really not very good. Maybe Arizona State. Arizona State is not great either, but I think they're better than Colorado. Everybody else, good luck. Everybody else, I'm not saying there's not going to be blowouts.
Wayne, Colorado is an 0-12 football program.
No, they're terrible.
They did maybe fine.
They have Josh McCown's kid as a freshman quarterback. I swear to you guys, he's tiny, but he's kind of a gamer. He's not going to win a lot because I can't protect him, and it's a struggle.
No,
but they're not going to win at all, Wayne.
There's no wins on that schedule, my guy.
I agree, but what I'm getting at is everybody else. Like if you watched the Washington State Oregon game,
dude,
holy cow, Washington State had that game, and then if all you saw is the score, you're like, oh yay, Oregon won big. No, they didn't, man. They escaped. I know Bo Nix is playing much better. I love the way they're using him right now, but Washington State found a way to lose that game.
Washington State was up 12 with six minutes to go.
Yeah. I mean, they just found a way to lose that game. And then same thing with, Oregon State had every chance against USC too. I mean, these games are crazy. And then if you paid any attention to what Cal did against Notre Dame, there were some horrible calls by the referees that affected. I mean, there's just so many. The Pac-12 has got a lot of teams that are not great, but they're gonna bring it. And trust me, you're going to watch a good game on Friday night. That UCLA-Washington game, you can make fun all you want. That should be a game that perks up people's attention across the nation because it's going to be a good football game. Really, two good quarterbacks are going to go after it. But there's a lot of other good NFL talent on both these teams.
I mean, Wayne, I'm going to do my best to stay awake. You and Cerber were giving me a hard time when we hopped on today before the show.
Dude.
Cerber's like, dude, you sound like you're faded. You sound like you're totally gassed. And it's only Tuesday night. I'm going to tell you, man, as the father of two kids, by the time Friday night gets here, your boy here is done. That game kicking off at 10:30, I'm going to try my best. I may have to take a nap, not going to lie. But these are two teams that I have my eye on all summer, man. This is a huge – here's the thing, man. The margins in college football and football in general are so small. You go back to the SC Oregon State game on Saturday night into the wee hours of Sunday morning. And by the way, guys, nobody cares that you can't find Pac-12 Network on your cable box. It's 2022. Find another way, okay? Steal somebody's login, or you can do what grown-ups do. Listen to the radio broadcast, okay? I tweeted out the link on the Varsity Network. Put your big boy pants on. Nobody cares that you can't find the game because your cable provider's in a dispute with the Pac-12. Let's move on. Remember the fourth and six at midfield. Yep. Okay, yep. You're USC. You're down four. You got to figure it out. The Bush push.
Yeah.
I mean, the margins are so thin. Like, that could have been the game right there. NSC gets the extra yard. The game continues, and then Caleb Williams hooks up with the Biletnikoff winner, who's he's pretty good. He only had three catches on the game. Listen, people want to crown SC. That's fine. I still think when it's all said and done, they're not going to be winners of the Pac-12 conference. That's just one man's opinion, but you can't keep living on these margins. I mean, they're on the knife's edge right now, and they've gotten all the bounces, literally.
And you start to see, when teams kind of figure teams out and they start game planning a certain way to play again. I mean, not everybody has, Oregon State's a good football team. I thought they should have been ranked in the top 25. And they would have been if they would have found a way to win at home. But SC showed that they're not, the greatest show on turf, at least, at that game. I mean, to only get 17, to struggle the way they did, and to need all those turnovers and not capitalize on them. You'd think if the other quarterback threw four turnovers, what would you have guessed the score would have been?
Sure.
40? I mean, like, at least. So, listen, this is going to be – this weekend we're learning so much. We're going to see what Michigan's offense looks like against Iowa. We're going to – it's funny that Oklahoma's favored against TCU. I'm real interested in that one because I'm not sure about Oklahoma at this point right now. The Minnesota-Purdue game, Minnesota's looked awesome.
They've played
nobody. Purdue's 2-2, and they've played a pretty tough schedule, and I think their losses are like by a combined 7 points. It's not like they've been out of these games. So, like, to me, like, I think in the UCLA-Washington game, you're going to learn a lot. Ole Miss, Kentucky, I mean, there's so much. Utah's got a battle in them with Oregon State. Now, granted, it's at Utah, so that helps. I mean, there's so many good top 25 games. Even Texas Tech, they're a 3-1 team that's not ranked, but they've proven that they're pretty good. And by the way, can we just point out that the hire of Chris Klieman was amazing? And can we also point out the fact that Adrian Martinez, even though his stats are not anything special, like when you have a quarterback like that and you're a smart coach and you don't ask him to do too much. I'll make my NFL comparison. You've got Dak Prescott, right?
Oh, and we isn't that guy on the injured list?
He is, but my point is that they're playing a football game with Cooper Rush, the Central Michigan product, and they're winning, but they're doing it with defense and smart offense. They're running the ball. They're using play action. I think sometimes we rely on our athletic quarterbacks to win games for us so much that if we would just tap the brakes a little bit and just be sound at everything we do, you're going to win more games. I just think that the way that Klieman has always coached, and let's face it, this guy does nothing but win, and what he's doing at Kansas State right now is pretty special. But Texas Tech is pretty good, so that's going to be a heck of a game. And you want to kind of tap the brakes on whenever you have Adrian Martinez, you don't want to put him in a lot of situations where he's forced to do stuff, and then you get the turnovers they got in the past. But I will say this, though. Coaches matter. You can look at any coach in the country, and you could take one quarterback and put him with a certain coach in a certain system, and they will be really, really good. You put that same kid in a different system with a different coach that's not a good quarterback coach and doesn't know how to manage the quarterback position, and they can really struggle. Like, coaches at that position, probably, in my opinion, more than any other position in sports, you can ruin a kid. I mean, you can absolutely just absolutely destroy a kid if you're not good. But if you have good coaching, it's pretty amazing what can happen. I'll give Serber an example real quick. DJ was awesome this weekend, correct, Serbs?
Yeah, probably the best he's looked since Notre Dame game on the road where Clemson lost.
I agree. And if you really think about it, Dabo has never wavered on him. Having a coach, and we know that they've had good quarterbacks there, and they've had really good play. Usually, they've gotten to where they need to be a little bit faster. But to see DJ, and I'm not saying this is going to last forever, but to see him playing at a level he's playing at right now is exciting. But that's also an opportunity to look at like what good coaching. Sometimes you don't pull the trigger too fast. You hang in there and you see what's going to happen. I mean, he was amazing.
Server, you missed out on the Monday show with Roddy, and we talked about DJ and his performance at Wake Forest. Like, are you at peace with it, or are you still skeptical that this is, that performance specifically wasn't just a flash in the pan?
I think people have been very hard on DJ in general.
Sure.
All things considered, I get it. He was a highly touted prospect coming in. He had a rough year last year. He also didn't have a great offensive line, and he had receivers who dropped a lot of passes. He struggles with accuracy somewhat, and we've seen a huge improvement with that this season, I think. Wayne could talk about his footwork better than I can. I still think he lacks elite level athleticism and footwork. When it comes to the mechanics of his game, he does have a really quick release though, which can kind of make up for that. And so what I saw from against Wake Forest was kind of what we've been seeing from him all season and towards the tail end of last season. Clemson has the longest winning streak in the nation right now.
Right.
And DJ has a lot to do with that, and his improvement has a lot to do with that. But also the reliability of his wide receivers has been understated this entire time.
Right.
We've seen a lot of drop passes by Bo Collins, Dakari Collins, EJ Williams, guys that were supposed to step into the T. Higgins role and perform at that level. And what we've come to expect at Clemson, with T. Higgins coming on the heels of Mike Williams, Mike Williams coming on the heels of Sammy Watkins. There's always been like go-to guy, and then even the little guys like Hunter Renfrow. These receivers haven't been playmakers the way those guys were. Like, don't get me wrong, Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence were better quarterbacks than DJ Uiagalelei based on what we've seen so far. But they also had much higher level receiver play. And what we saw against Wake Forest was receivers making plays that, for whatever reason, over the past season and a half, they haven't been making. Over the shoulder catches by Bo Collins that, for whatever reason, even though he's a five-star wide receiver prospect and a guy who's played with DJ his entire life out in California, on the same high school team and probably, prep teams before that in middle school and Pop Warner, just dropping balls. But these guys weren't doing that. So I think it was good to see DJ have the game that he's had the potential to have for quite a while and for everything to come together for Clemson. It was an exciting game as a Tiger fan.
To me, it's funny because I love what you said there. That was awesome. I think DJ is getting better and better and better, but I could tell you from experience, when I had a Heisman Trophy receiver, I was a lot better when that guy got than I was when he got hurt.
A lot of people don't know, Wayne, the UCLA radio broadcast. I'm the one that produces the opens and the scene setters and stuff like that. All the Wayne Cook highlights I have J.J. Stokes in them as well. Not to take anything away from you, great quarterback at UCLA, a legend there. But there's a lot of Wayne Cook to J.J. Stokes highlights.
Right.
And for a reason, right?
Does Joe Montana complain about having to throw to Jerry Rice all the time?
Hell no.
They don't. As a matter of fact, if you go down and start listing, Terry Bratch, I know I'm going to go old here. You automatically think of Lynn Swann and John Stallworth. When you think of Troy Aikman, you think of Michael Irvin. When you think of, just pick a quarterback throughout the history, and almost all of them, not all of them, but almost all of them have guys that are going into the Hall of Fame right beside them. That's why I always think it's so funny. Like, you need really good receivers. As a matter of fact, more than ever, college football is a receiver game now. It's so much about elite receivers. Ohio State, it just makes a living off of it. Alabama, over the last several years, has made a living off of it. So, dude, I'm 100% with you on how much better he's got. And again, I would be more concerned about giving up 45 points. I would be like, for me, one of the things, and I hope everybody listening realizes that, like, when you give up, like, in the 20s, in the modern era of college football, you're actually had a good week.
That's a win.
When you're in the 30s and 40s, then you start questioning. And even the low 30s sometimes can be a win. And I know that we get lost on – there's just so many rules that affect defenses now, that those numbers are very skewed. I mean, I've asked Phil about it before, and the numbers are just naturally higher for what you look at. But there's a lot of teams in the top 25 that are giving up decent sized numbers. So we'll have to watch that going forward. But I love what you said there about quarterbacks. I think he's getting better. He's probably – when you have such high expectations – and this happens all over the country. Some guys have such high expectations. Like, what do you think everybody's saying in Texas right now? Just wait till we get Quinn Ewers back. And maybe he wins every game he plays when he comes back. But holy cow, if he doesn't. I'm going to give you one more example, and I know we're getting close to Phil. But I will say this. Like, I did watch the NFL game last night, right?
Of course you did.
And I told you guys a few years back that I actually was high on Daniel Jones. I said the guy's actually a good player. He has the worst offensive line in football last night. And if you actually watch that game, and you weren't a huge Giants fan that just probably hates the light, hates life and hates everybody, he was awesome in that game. He was running around. He was completing passes. He threw a corner route to the sidelines where he was basically in the air. He just threw it all arm, and it was perfect. I mean, that guy is getting zero help. And he, if he had help, he could be in the near the top, at least in the top half of the league. I think even better. And I know that people don't want to hear that, but he's good.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Dude, you love the NFL stuff, man. Let's get our man Phil in here. Phil Steele, we talk to him every week. Phil, I know you like football, man. You'll watch football anywhere, anytime, anyplace. How do you, like, reconcile what you're watching on Sundays with what you spend all day Saturday doing? I know they're two completely different sports, but, like, are you a Saturdays greater than Sunday guy? Because Wayne just can't help himself. It's
no,
a trap.
I love
Hang on
Saturdays.
A sec. Hang on. That Cowboys-Giants game on Monday night was brutal television, and Wayne just can't get enough of it, Phil. Where do you stand on this stuff?
Well, I tell you, with the magazine, I always say I'm college football 365, and I got to be honest with you, on Sundays, I'm watching college football replays. I don't even watch the NFL. I just watch college football, and that's really all I do. So I probably watch the playoffs when they roll around, but other than that, I really don't have that big of an interest in the NFL. I'm strictly a college football guy.
Good for you.
Just to defend myself here, just because Steven likes to put words in my mouth, I do the same thing, Phil. I actually, because I'm gone all day on Saturdays, I watch a lot of those games. But when there's nothing else on and I'm all caught up, I will watch an NFL game. And what's fun for me, and this is the only reason why I really like it, and I am not a diehard NFL fan at all, I just like watching some of the players we talk about a lot. And because sometimes it's fun to predict, like, you know, some of the guys that you put on your draft boards or people that you think are going to be good at the next level. I think it's fun to just see how that works out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If I'm watching the NFL, it's always fun to see where where my favorite college players ended up.
Yep.
Well, Phil, this is an exciting show because for the first time, I think all season, we have a chance to legitimately talk about UCLA football because they're playing a ranked opponent on Friday night with Washington coming to town. You know, Wayne and I were talking before you came on. I think the line's hovering around 2.5, 3 points. So, you know, give us your unbiased opinion about what's going to happen late Friday night at the Rose Bowl.
Well, Wayne, how many people are going to be there for UCLA?
Wow.
You know what? No, slow down. I am a little worried about that too. But I'm thinking, you know, we just haven't played big name programs yet. So I'm thinking 2-4-0 teams. I'm thinking Washington, UCLA. I think it's going to look more like what UCLA gets when a good game's coming. So I would be shocked if it's not at least pushing that 45-50, and I'm hoping for bigger.
So half empty is what he's saying.
Still, but you guys remember, most stadiums in the country don't hold that many. So it looks full when you have a stadium that holds 30 or 40. But I'm hoping it's going to be big. It is Friday night, which is always a challenge in L.A., but I think people are going to show up.
All right, sounds good. Well, I think looking at the game, I've been more impressed with Washington so far this year. Although if you go back and take a look at that Michigan State win, as impressive as it was, Minnesota just beat Michigan State even worse. So this will be the true test for Michael Penix and company. But Penix has really blossomed in this offense, and he's finally healthy. Last year when he began the season at Indiana, he wasn't healthy. He was sort of protecting his injury. That's gone now. He's got who was his offensive coordinator then in Kalen DeBoer as his head coach. 12 touchdown passes, just one interception. And Wayne Talapapa, who really at Virginia, I don't think he ever averaged over 4 yards a carry, averaging 6.4 yards per carry behind this big mammoth offensive line. I also like the way Washington's playing defense. They're holding opponents to 158 yards below their season, or 53 yards below their season average. But UCLA playing good defense, playing good offense. I think it's going to be a great game, but I got to side with Washington to come out of there with the win. I've just been a little bit more impressed with them.
Real quick, Phil, the over-under here is like 66, and it's one of the bigger numbers of the weekend. Do you anticipate this is going to be a shootout?
I'm trying to look and see what I have for my projected final on the game. I think it'd probably be right around the 66 number. I'm not looking for a huge amount of points. I think both teams have better than expected defenses here.
Okay.
I am not offended by any of that, Phil. I think this is a heck of a game, too. I've been impressed with Washington, too. You and I have talked about that before. I love what Penix is doing. I think the front seven for Washington is really good. I'm just curious to see what UCLA is going to do. Zach Charbonnet is going to be an interesting piece here to see if he can get going on the ground. And if they do, then I think UCLA's got a better chance. But I'm with you. I think it's a great game. Another good game, Texas Tech against Kansas State. Like, pretty exciting to see what Kansas State's doing this year. Adrian Martinez at quarterback. Texas had some big wins. So, good game here.
Yeah, and I love Joey McGuire after the game against Texas. They just beat Texas. Big win for Texas Tech. And all he could say was, you know what, we're 1-0 in the Big 12. He's got the confidence to say, we're going to go for the Big 12 title this year. And I like the way they played. But the matchup, I think, really favors Kansas State. If you follow this series history, this one has pretty much been all Kansas State. They usually have a great secondary. They usually play great against the air raid. They've won the last six games in the series. And Donovan Smith, as good as he looked last week, still has those five interceptions this year, and Kansas State's got a ball-hawking secondary. So I think Donovan Smith on the road, off that big win at home, in front of the big home crowd, probably turns it over a few times. Meanwhile, Adrian Martinez, wow. I mean, the guy, he didn't even have a touchdown pass coming into last week, and he looked like a killer. How about that 3rd-and-16 run for Martinez when it looked like Oklahoma's going to get the ball back with a chance to tie? No, he runs all the way down, slides it down at the 2-yard line, and even eats more time off the clock. He and Deuce Vaughn are a dangerous combination. I got to like Kansas State to win this one at home.
Wow. Okay. Michigan-Iowa, Phil. Another noon game. Iowa's offense obviously is dreadful, but I think we're going to find out just how good Michigan is. Or isn't. All right. Nice win over Maryland. Sure. Terp spotted you 7 right off the jump. You won the game by 7. I just, Wayne and I were talking about it before you came on, Phil. I haven't been that impressed with Michigan. That's just me. Iowa has a penchant for knocking off top 5 teams in Iowa City. Can they do it again Saturday? They're catching double digits.
Yeah, I would think if you take almost everybody's record against top 5 teams, it's a losing record, right? But the last 6 times I always played a top 5 team, naturally they've been a dog all 6 times, I think. They've won 5 of the 6 and covered the other. So they're 6-0 against the spread and won 5 of them outright. Kinnick Stadium is a beast. They have got the defense. And even the one game they lost this year at Iowa State, low-scoring game, only lost by 3. Here, I was getting double digits from a Michigan team that, you're right, Steven, they didn't impress me last week. They were gifted the first touchdown. They also had another turnover in the game, so there were +2 in turnovers. But the defense didn't look awesome, and the offense had some flaws. I thought they would move the ball better than what they did on Maryland. Granted, Blake Corum looked great at 478 yards, but Iowa can take away your main guy. So if Iowa takes away Corum, can J.J. McCarthy beat him? And that's going to be the big question without making mistakes. The thing about Cade McNamara, he didn't make mistakes. J.J. McCarthy is big plays, but it could also mean some turnovers. I think Iowa gets a couple of turnovers. I definitely like the Hawkeyes plus the points at home. Plus, they're playing with the extra added motivation of the fact, you know, last year they got beat 42-3 in the Big Ten title game, which was actually much closer than the at the half than the final score was.
I don't know. The more we keep going through these games, man, this is a great weekend. I love it when we get into conference play, and this next one's going to be a good one as well. Purdue, I know they're 2-2, but I think they've only lost by a total of 7 points. They've been right there. Minnesota's look great. I love their running game. Tanner Morgan's a heck of a quarterback. Minnesota's looked really, really good, and it feels like nobody's really talking about them. Another exciting game. I like Minnesota, but I think it'll be a good game.
Yeah, I think it will be a good game, but I agree with you, Wayne. I like Minnesota, and you know, when I was talking to Coach Brohm, he mentioned that they don't match up very well against big offensive lines because they have a small, speedy defensive front. And that's what's been the case in this series. Minnesota's won the last four. They've won 8 of the last 9. And the Gophers have just been, you know, you saw them against a weak schedule, right? Just like Michigan. But they played Michigan State, and that thing was 34-0 before Michigan State got a late score on them. And as much as they lost their top wide receiver, Chris Ottman-Bell, Coach Fleck told me they had 4 NFL caliber receivers. So, okay, they only have 3, and they've got the run game with Ibrahim, who's just running ridiculously well. They've got Potts back there, and Tanner Morgan now with his offensive coordinator back looks like Tanner Morgan of a couple years ago when Minnesota had the big year. Now, Aiden O'Connell missed last week. I would think he probably returns here. They need him for sure, but I think Minnesota matches up well. They're at home. I'm going to lay the lumber in this one and take the favorite, Minnesota.
Wow. Okay. Another game at noon. This game kicks off, Wayne, at 9 a.m. your time. This is such a good football game for 9 o'clock California time. I don't know if you'll still be hungover from what happened at the Rose Bowl or what didn't happen at the Rose Bowl on Friday night. But let's talk about it anyway. Kentucky, Ole Miss, Bill, pair of undefeated teams, both 4-0 in the SEC. This is a huge swing game for both of these programs. I don't think anyone expects them to be in Atlanta at the end of the year. But boy, whoever wins this is going to have the leg up on doing something really special.
Wayne, are you up at 9 a.m. watching these games?
I will be up at 6 a.m. watching all the pregame shows. And, yes, I eat Saturday when I get a Friday game. I'm so excited about this. I'm going to watch all of this.
Awesome. Awesome. And speaking of pregame shows, just a pet peeve while I'm out there. Why does ESPN run their pregame show to like 12:05? The games last too long already. There's too many overlaps. Why do you kick off at 10 minutes after 12? Why not just start the games at noon, for crying out loud? All right, I'll get up myself. Let's take a look at this matchup. Naturally, you got Ole Miss that throws the ball all over the field, and Kentucky just runs the football. Oops, that's not the case this year. Ole Miss comes in averaging 281 yards per game on the ground, 5.8 yards per carry. Kentucky averaging 82 yards on the ground. Meanwhile, they're throwing the football for 296 yards per game with Will Levis, an NFL-caliber QB. Now, they get Rodriguez back at running back, but I don't think that's going to correct their offensive line. The offensive line's given up 16 sacks this year so far. 13.7% is opening holes for 2.4, and they're on the road. And as bad as Ole Miss looked against Tulsa last week defensively, they had played much better than that in the first 3 games, and I expect them to do better than that here. And offensively, I think Ole Miss can hurt you running the football, but also Jackson Dart or Luke Altmyer can hurt you throwing the football. So I think Ole Miss is the stronger team. They're at home. They're laying less than a touchdown right now. So I like the Rebels minus the points in that one.
Wow, that's going to be a lot of fun. Good stuff.
All right, here we go. So I got another. The next one here is Oklahoma at TCU. I'm kind of curious, but if I was looking at the board I'm looking at, I might think about this one as a possible upset, Phil.
Yeah, and you could, looking at the numbers, I think, because TCU looked good last week against SMU. But look at TCU's other 2 wins. You know, Colorado – at the half, they were actually outgained 212-67, came back strong in the second half. Tarleton State, okay, big deal. And even last week against SMU, they benefited from +2 in turnovers and won the game by 8. So they really haven't been tested. Meanwhile, Oklahoma has played better, more tests. They flunked a big-time test last week. But I think Oklahoma, off a loss, can afford no more losses in the Big 12. So you're going to get the A game here for Oklahoma. And if you look at the series history, Oklahoma has won the last 8 games in this series, and usually by pretty good margins. Last year they won 52-31, the year before that 33-14. So I think you're taking a look at an Oklahoma team angry off a loss. Yeah, they got Texas on deck, but Texas means nothing if they lose this game. You can't go to 0-2 in the Big 12. I actually like Oklahoma by more than a touchdown.
Okay. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Max Duggan for TCU has been a lot of fun to watch this year as well, Phil. Let's go to the Pac-12. Oregon State, Utah, early kick in Salt Lake City, 2 o'clock in the East. What is that, Wayne? Noon local time? Are we in the mountain time zone for Utah? I forget.
Mountain's an hour different. It's just an hour different.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's the deal, Phil. On the surface, you're thinking Oregon State's going to be hungover. Despite, you know, they gave max effort against USC, Utah has just been waxing teams since losing by Florida on the final play of the game. Any read on this one?
Yeah, to me, this is two go-with teams. I mean, Oregon State, if you look at the body of work, what they have done this season to wallop Boise State at home, go on the road and beat Fresno State, and that was when Fresno State had Haener at quarterback, destroy Montana State, and then last week, you know, they're leading USC, gave up a late touchdown, but USC's offense had scored almost every possession. Every time they got the football, they scored. USC had 17 points last week, only 357 yards. I think they punted six times. I don't know if USC had punted six times in their first three games combined. So I love what Oregon State's doing this year. But you hit it on the head, Steven. Since that loss to Florida, Utah's just smacking people. And they really haven't even been as close as the final scores would indicate. Last week, 34-13 over Arizona State. That thing was 24-6 at the half. Arizona State at 59 yards. I am a little disturbed that Brent Keithy is out. First of all, as a John Mackey Award member, or voter, I should say, I'm disturbed that one of the best tight ends in college football is going to miss the rest of the year. Yeah. He was a huge part of their offense, but they will survive. They've got plenty of playmakers there on offense, and Cam Rising's the quarterback that stirs the drink. So I find it tough to go against Oregon State getting that many points. I would not bet against Utah at home with Muss. They're a student crowd there. So this is one I'm going to pass on and just enjoy watching. It should be a great college game.
That's a fair analysis. I like that. Utah's home field advantage is something incredible. This next one's it pretty exciting to me, too. Phil, you got Wake Forest coming off the tough loss to Clemson. You got Florida State, who I said this before, maybe they're being undervalued a little bit. I don't know. What a game this is going to be.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And, you know, even last year's game, while Wake Forest won it big 35-14, they were +4 in turnovers in that game. So it wasn't quite as dominant as the final score would indicate. And, you know, Florida State this year, the big number that stands out, and Stephen will appreciate this, 4-0 against the spread, and most of them haven't even been close. And so you look at Florida State, Jordan Travis got banged up last week, but I think he'll be fine. Travis returned last week, I should say, after his injury and looked great. They've got Ward and Benson in the backfield. They've got dangerous receivers, and the defense holding opponents to 62 yards per game below their season average. They do have the defensive edge, but I think Wake's offense showed me a lot last week. That Clemson defense is one of the best defensive in the country. And while they couldn't really run the ball as well, and I didn't think they would be able to run, they ate up Clemson secondary, threw for 337 yards, and had their enough opportunities to win that game. They led it late. Clemson forced overtime, and they lost it in OT. So this is a Wake Forest team that's probably better than people give them credit for. They're getting points on the road. I got to take the Wake Forest team that was in the ACC title game to come out of there with the win here. I like Wake plus the points in that one.
Phil, a pair of Big Ten teams, or Big Ten games, I should say, with some pretty big numbers in this mid-afternoon slate. Ohio State favored by 40 against Rutgers. Penn State, who's up to 11 in the polls, favored by 4 touchdowns against Northwestern. Either one of those games do anything for you? Any value there?
Yeah, one of them I think has a little bit of value. It's not the Ohio State-Rutgers game, and I say that because 2 years ago, I thought Rutgers had no offense. They're taking on Ohio State's explosive offense, and there's no chance that they would even be in the game. And in that game, Ohio State led big at the half. It was 35-7 on way to a blowout. And then Rutgers started using all these special teams things, a backwards throw on a kickoff, and all of a sudden the final score is just 56-21. So I was a little bitter about that. But if you look at Penn State-Northwestern, I think the situation favors Northwestern. And the fact that, you know, Penn State, if you look at what they've got coming up, they've got Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio State. Yes, there's a bye on deck, but that's some pretty big opponents that you've got coming up. And if you look at Northwestern, every single one of their games has been decided by single digits this year. And so they're a scrappy team. They're not going to stop. Yeah, Penn State probably is 28 points better on paper, but Pat Fitzgerald's an outstanding underdog. Penn State's game against Central Michigan last week, they were +4 in turnovers, yet only won the game by 19. That concerns me a little. They only led by 7 at the half. So I like Northwestern plus the 4 touchdowns in that one, just for the fact that Penn State's got bigger fish to fry on the horizon.
Love it.
Phil, pretty big number for Alabama-Arkansas. Alabama goes on the road again. We've talked about this before, whether it was last year against Florida or this year against Texas. I actually feel like Arkansas is probably maybe better than Texas is. So pretty big number. Do you think Arkansas keeps it close or even has a chance at an upset here?
Yeah, I'm on your side there, Wayne, as far as, I mean, if you watch last year's Arkansas-Texas game, Arkansas just kicked Texas's butt last year. So are they better? Yeah, I think they might be better than Texas. And you hit it right on the head. Alabama just struggles on the road. The Florida game, they needed a stop two-point conversion last year. They lost at A&M, and they should have lost to Auburn. Had Bigsby not gone out of bounds, they would have lost to Auburn. They needed 4 overtimes to win that one. And then this year, Texas just completely outplayed them. 25-16 first down. Texas loses their starting quarterback. Card's not 100% in the second half. And yet Bama needs a field goal on the end of the play, at the end of the game, just to pull out the one-point win. Arkansas was on the verge of going up 21-7 on A&M last week. They looked dominant. Then a fumble return for a touchdown, I think, changed things around. But they've got the running game. They've got the quarterback in KJ Jefferson that can give Alabama's defense some problems. And defensively, the main concern I would have is Alabama's or Arkansas's pass D, which is giving up 302 yards per game against Bryce Young. But he doesn't have quite the weapons that you would think he'd have at Alabama. So add it all up. I like Arkansas plus the points in that one.
Oh, good stuff. That gets Wayne very excited. Anytime you try to pierce Alabama's armor, he gets very excited about that. Wayne, good one in the Big 12. The 3:30 window is pretty stacked on Saturday. Oklahoma State, Baylor. I don't have a read on this Bears team. I didn't expect much from them against Iowa State last week. They looked pretty good. Blake Shapen found some receivers. He was making throws. Baylor, a home favorite against the number 9 team in the land. What do you make of that?
Yeah, and, you know, you go back to Michigan, who they play. And granted, Oklahoma State's schedule is not Michigan's schedule. They did beat Central Michigan. And that was a game they actually led 51-15. Only won 58-44. Central had a lot of second-half yards. They beat Arizona State 34-17. That was with Herm Edwards as the head coach. And then Arkansas Pine Bluff. So haven't really been tested. Meanwhile, Baylor's been tested twice. Came up short at BYU, a game where the crowd got to them. The crowd didn't bother them against Iowa State last week. I liked Iowa State. I thought the Cyclones were going to win that one at home, and Baylor pretty much led that thing start to finish. So it was Baylor impressed me last week as well. They've got the Dave Aranda defense that's actually holding opponents to 107 yards below their season average. Oklahoma State lost a lot defensively from last year's unit, so I don't think their defense is as good. In fact, they're actually allowing 96 yards above what opponents average coming into the year. Offensively, pretty close. Give the edge to Oklahoma State, but a big home field edge to Baylor. They haven't lost at home in the last 2 years. So I got to take Baylor, and I believe they're laying less than a field goal in this one. So I like Baylor minus the 2.5 over Oklahoma State.
Nothing but good games. We've got Texas A&M at Mississippi State. It feels like we know more about Texas A&M at this point than we do about Mississippi State. The number's at about 4. What do you think, Phil?
Yeah, and I think if you play the game on paper, much like last week, I thought if you played Arkansas and Texas A&M on paper, you'd have no choice but to take Arkansas. But A&M's got talent. Now, granted, they lost their wide receiver, Anaya Smith, which is a big loss.
Yeah.
He was by far their best receiver. But they still have talented receivers there. They've got 4 and 5 stars all over the lineup. I think A&M actually has more talent than Mississippi State. Mississippi State, in my mind, is having a better year. They blew away Memphis and Arizona and Bowling Green. In the LSU game, they led 13-0. They led 13-7 in the fourth quarter, came up short in Death Valley. But there's just I just see A&M for some reason, as much as my numbers would say take Mississippi State minus the 4, I think A&M's got a shot at the outright upset. And it could be like last year Remember last year, everybody threw A&M overboard once they lost their first two games. Then they upset Bama, blew out Missouri, blew out South Carolina, blew out Auburn, and looked like a different team after that. I think we still haven't seen the best A&M. Maybe we'll see them this Saturday.
Wow. Phil, NC State, Clemson, College Game Day is going to be there. This game is going to be soggy at best. I mean, you got the hurricane moving through. I saw the over-under, at least as we sit and record this on Tuesday night, is sitting at 40. So, I mean, not a lot of scoring expected between the Wolfpack and the Tigers. Clemson obviously coming off the really nice win in Winston-Salem. Any read on this game, given obviously what's going to be going on with the weather and just the overall climate at Death Valley?
Yeah, have you seen what's done with the side? Because the side was like 6.5 before. What's
it? It's still there. Yeah, it's still sitting at 6.
That's interesting. I think it will be a lower scoring game. I mean, you've got two really good defenses here, and I also have two really good running backs. Everybody knows who Will Shipley is, and Will Shipley is. Looked like Will Shipley should so far, 353 yards. But Deme Sumo-Kangbe is a guy that has rushed for 252 yards, 6.5 yards per carry, and become the feature carrier of that NC State offense. Overall, I like NC State's secondary better. I like Clemson's defensive line better. Those two units are very close. Offensively, I give a slight edge to Clemson with Shipley over at the running back spot. And the home edge, of course, Death Valley. Plus, they're playing with legitimate revenge after losing last year in overtime. But frankly, with the weather moving in and it being a lower scoring game, I can't lay 6 points, but I don't know if I take 6 points. So this is another one of those games I'm going to stay away from. But I'm an old-fashioned football guy. I like to see defense. So if we see a lot of defense in this game, I don't mind.
You hear that, Wayne? You don't have to bet every game. It's okay to just watch one
for
entertainment.
I'm going to listen to that. Yes. You know, Steven, what's on the board right now for the other, you know, the Georgia and the Pitt and the USC and the Oregon game, I'm going to go ahead and just say the favorites are all going to win those. I'm going to go off the board because I think this is a really good game. I think people are sleeping on what Cal can do. I think they play great defense. And I think Washington State, man, they had a great chance of winning that game last week and moving themselves in the top 25. I actually think that the Cal-Washington State game is a game that people might want to watch. I think it's going to be a good football game.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's going to be a great game. And you look at last week's game, I think Washington State was rather fortunate to be in the lead as they were in the fourth quarter, 34-22. I mean, Oregon settled for so many field goals. And Washington State, of course, got that big 95-yard interception return for a touchdown, which is a 14-point swing. In fact, prior to the final drive for Washington State, Oregon had a 624-350-yard edge, and yet it ended up a three-point game thanks to that touchdown they scored with 2 seconds left. With Cal, I've been overall impressed. And you know what? Mm-hmm. Justin Wilcox is not a great home favorite. We saw that against UC Davis. We saw it against UNLV. They looked good last week against Arizona. But he is an amazing away dog. I think he's something like 13-1, I don't have the record in front of me, but he's just an amazing away underdog, and that's the role he's got here. They do have a very good defense. I think they're better defensively. Jack Plummer has looked good at times. I mean, he's got an 8-2 ratio this year, and you go back to Washington State, as I mentioned, they were down 300 yards to Oregon. Wisconsin had a 22-10 first down edge on them. I think Cal's got a real good shot of pulling the outright upset on the road there.
Wow. Nice. All right. Very good. Phil, I ask you this every week. We don't have to force it, but Wayne's going off the board with games. Is there anything off the board that catches your eye on Saturday?
Yeah, I am going to go with one. And it's a team I've been watching. Well, I watch all the games, but I mean, watching a fairly close Louisiana. And, you know, Louisiana, I thought got fortunate against Eastern Michigan due to the weather delay, but they were absolutely dominant in the second half. Put up 49 points in the second half of the game after being shut out at the half. Then in a little bit of a letdown spot, they struggled at Rice. And last week, they blew a 17-7 lead against ULM. But those both were on the road. They're back at home. They're practically unbeatable at home. They've got a talented team, one that still has a shot at winning their division. Frankly, I'm shocked that South Alabama is laying almost double digits on the road to Louisiana. So I like the home underdog here, Louisiana. I know South Alabama's look good against Central Michigan. They look real good against UCLA, as Wayne will attest to.
Yeah, they did.
And they looked good last week against Louisiana Tech. But to be this big of a road favorite against the defending Sun Belt champs, I'm taking Louisiana to pull the upset at home. I'd throw it on the money line as well on this one.
Wow.
How about that?
So can I still ask one more?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't believe there's a really good game, Phil. Iowa State, Kansas. To me, this is another one of those fun games, kind of like the Cal Washington State game that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, and you play this thing prior to the year, and Iowa State's what, a 17-point favorite, and now they're barely laying over a field goal in this one. Here's a key number. Since Jalen Daniels has become the starting quarterback at Kansas, they are 7-0 against the spread. So you love that. But I think overall, Iowa State's just the more complete team. Defensively, there's not even a question here. Iowa State's holding the opponents to 149 yards below their season average. Kansas's defense, they're actually allowing opponents 30 yards above. I do think Jalen Daniels is an incredible quarterback. Kansas is an incredible story. But now everybody's talking about him. Meanwhile, Iowa State's sort of under the radar, and I still think Hunter Decker's going to put up better stats than Brock Purdy. They're coming off a loss, their first of the year. I like Iowa State on the road in that one, but I tell you what, Jalen Daniels and Kansas are quite a story.
I think Matt Campbell's still yelling at the officials from that game in Ames last week, Phil. That guy was unhinged. I mean, goodness gracious, he wanted blood. He really did. Phil, appreciate the time as always. PhilSteele.com at PhilSteele042 on Twitter. He's the best, Phil. Enjoy week 5, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, a lot of fun, as always. Enjoy the football this weekend, gentlemen.
That's so good.
Thanks, Phil.
That's phenomenal. I mean, listen, I didn't have my eyes on South Al at Louisiana Saturday, but guess what, boys? I do now. 5 o'clock on ESPN Plus. Fire up the iPad. Woo!
There he goes again with South Al.
That's just watch.
Dude, it's happening.
This running back, okay? He's a human bowling ball, okay? The name's Webb. He's got legs the size of tree trunks. And if they can't stop, I'm telling you, they got a quarterback too. It's a good game. You know, it's so funny this week, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, but like there's games on like West Virginia, Texas. Like these are not ranked teams.
Give me the Nears.
But my point is that's a good game. I mean, West Virginia is one of those teams. Yeah, they've got two losses, but they've been right there. Like it's to me, this is when you start getting into conference play. And you start looking at the other games, the Cal Washington State games, like these teams that are good, they're just finding ways to lose close games. Like, I think there's a lot of them out there when you start going through the conferences. So trust me, this to me is when you don't have a team playing schools you've never heard of or they're just overmatched because the recruiting discrepancy is so big. Like, you're going to get some Power 5 conferences playing other Power 5 conference teams. And it's gonna matter. And I just think that this is when football gets really exciting.
I love it. That's well said. Quick public service announcement. We had a phenomenal week last week here on College Sports Now. Phenomenal numbers. Best numbers, actually, of the 2022 calendar year. I mean, we just absolutely crushed it. Wayne, I'm in no small part because you just brought the gas, as you always do. You heard Phil Steele. He brings it every week. But shout out to everybody who's been listening to the show. And shout out for the folks who have been leaving reviews. I mean, listen, we're an hour into the program tonight. Clearly, you like what you hear. Just leave a review. I mean, it takes 10 seconds. If you've already left a review, steal your wife's phone, steal your husband's phone, steal your parents' phone, your kids' phone, and just write a review on their phone, man. Like, we need the reviews. In fact, Serber, correct me if I'm wrong, but we actually have a recent review, and they call Wayne out by name.
Yeah, we do have a recent review by Ring of Fan. It's another 5-star review. They left a duck emoji, and then they followed that up with, "I could listen to Wayne rant about the difficulty of the Pac-12's 9-game conference schedule every week. You could, and you will, if you tune into this show, College Sports Now, every Wednesday."
Thank you, Ring of Fan.
Hey, and if this is a duck fan, which is why the duck is there, you just remember that Arizona State game a couple of years ago where you were just this close to going to the playoffs and you just – those 9-game conference schedules. I mean, I want you to think about this for a second. UCLA plays Washington, Utah, and Oregon. The Oregon trip is on the road. That is a gauntlet. I'm not trying to tell you that other Power 5s, because they all have it. You go through every Power 5 conference right now.
Why is this happening to me?
But I will – stop it. I will tell you that when you have an 8-game conference schedule. Where does the SEC almost always schedule a team that nobody even knows one player on their team?
The week before Thanksgiving.
The week right before their rivalry game half the time. Right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. And it's brilliant because there's.
Were you listening to dude's story, Wayne?
Dude, I'm just telling you. It happens all the time. There's got to be some uniformity behind it because it does affect teams.
It's trickle down.
Although it's
going
to change.
Man.
Once we get to the 12-team playoff, it's not going to matter.
Listen, if you're handing out $1.5 million to, a Southern Conference team, that's a big deal. Okay? This stuff matters. By the way, you know what Pac-12 team doesn't have to deal with Utah or USC in the regular season?
Who?
The one coming to your building on Friday night, man. I'm looking at Washington's schedule.
Yeah,
and yes,
matter.
I will raise my hand and acknowledge that in August I was very concerned about the Michael Penix to be QB1 decision, okay? Now, who have they played through the first 4 weeks? I would say nobody, but still.
Wait a second. Yes, they have.
They played
the people
Stanford.
The people that are responsible for the AP top 25, they're brilliant. They know exactly what they're talking about. How could they have been wrong on Michigan State? They couldn't be wrong on anybody. These people all know exactly what they're doing, and they can predict how good these teams are going to be, and they're never wrong. So they beat the 11th ranked team in the nation.
He's consumed with hatred.
No, I know. I wanted. If I had more time, I would have gone back and clipped the soundbite from last week. You know which one I'm talking about. The one where Wayne basically tells everybody to go to hell because he wasn't happy. Yes,
I had an out-of-body experience.
I have no doubt that people ran into you under the street last week after they heard that episode and were like, Wayne, I am worried about you, brother. I really am. You
what's our pastor's name? Did he hear that? Did
you need
Pastor Britt
down the hate.
Pastor Britt is a Miami Hurricanes fan right now, and trust me, he's wanting to say some bad words about what's going on there, too.
Hey,
I'm sure he was disappointed in you, though.
Before
really am.
Before we get to the quarterback study, we gave Wayne homework. We wanted to talk to him about who's hot, who's not in the quarterback community. Before we do that, can we sneak in a quick couple minutes of golf talk, Wayne? Just a couple quick minutes.
Are you disappointed that the international team didn't win because you're so anti-American? Is that what you are?
Slightly, but what I was going to say was, first of all, no excuses for the Americans whatsoever. I mean, the roster that the internationals brought to Charlotte was embarrassing.
Hey,
but what I was going to say
was... Hold on a second.
Wow, that is not what he was saying last
Serber
week at all.
Made his first ever trip to a professional golf tournament last week, and I was there.
Well.
I got to see it. And this dude, I mean, I'm used to spending time with Serber, and I feel like I've got a pretty decent read on the young man. This guy was grinning ear to ear, Wayne. The entire time. Like, this country club golf lifestyle, just like between the ropes, just scoping it out, just smashing drives. I mean, the guy was, he was in his element, man. You should have seen him in the merchandise tent. I thought I was going to lose him. I thought he was never going to come home.
When people that question golf, people it's not a sport, I don't get it. Once you get it, golf is amazing. It's one of my, not just playing it, but watching golf. People how can you sit and watch golf for 4 or 5 hours? I just think the drama, and then Serber, you can talk to this. They are so freaking good that it's unbelievable, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, they're sorry, my wife was walking into the door and she's making a loud noise. So my wife, and I muted myself, so sorry for the delay. Hey, honey, just take it easy. We're trying to have a show here.
Careful. Tap the brakes there.
did you hear how quickly I said sorry and I closed that bit right down? Yeah. Did you hear that?
Nice. Well played.
They're playing a different game than us, man. There was a point, Wayno, where we went out and checked out. There's an island green on a par 3 there at Quail Hollow. I think they had it set at 16. I don't think that's where it usually is. Either way, we walk up to it, and I'm looking at the fringe, and I'm and I think to myself, when I'm just off the green, I'm I'll putt it. The pros would putt it here. I should putt it. I'm looking at this at Quail Hollow. I'm looking at the fringe, and I'm no shit, they putt it. Their fringe is our green. the conditions of the courses they play on are, this is next level. And then they themselves, I watched Justin Thomas hit a bunker shot that I'm how did someone do that? How'd you learn how to do that? How do you get it to go that far out of that? No one does that I know. How?
Yeah, it's incredible, and it's funny, but what you'll notice is that the fairways and the fringe and even the primary cut is really pretty darn awesome. But on most of these big tournaments, when you get it in the rough, not the regular tournaments that are not real big, they'll mow them down. But you saw in that tournament, if you missed a fairway, like you were in trouble half the time.
Deadly. Because
the ball would set down, yeah. And it was hard to get it out, and it's hard to judge the spin. And I'll be honest with you, though, I'm glad you brought this up, because I almost texted you, Steven, because I know that you don't like America and you don't like any of our players. But you have to admit that this group of young players is pretty darn likable.
I mean, there's
come on,
a couple.
The American team is more likable than it's been in a long time.
There's a couple. I mean, like, I'll grant you, like, yeah, I like Max Homa. I'm a fan of him.
Oh, how can you not like Max Homa?
Some of these other guys, I mean, dude, Serber will tell you. I mean, I followed Cantlay for like four holes.
Oof.
That guy,
yeah.
Bro.
He hates him.
He
by the way, he's amazing.
Somebody needs to test him for beta blockers, because I'm pretty sure he can't feel a thing. I mean, his heart rate on the golf course is like 40 beats per minute.
Yeah,
I mean, hey, Patrick, why don't you hit the ball, pal?
He okay? does nothing but win.
God almighty.
He's a dominant performer. You lay off my Bruin. Hey, one more little comment. What I love about sports, and if you watch the press conference at the end of the President's Cup, Trevor Immelman, when people kept wanting to ask him about Liv and how many players they lost, he came close to losing it, and I wanted him to. I want to be like what's the line? There's a line in Hoosiers. Where, you know, when there's no Jimmy Chipwood and everybody at their pep rally is like, we want Jimmy or whatever they're doing. And he's like, hey, this is your team. They deserve your respect. Trevor Immelman was like, stop asking me about players that aren't here. He didn't say that, but that's what he was thinking. He's like, these guys, this is, there was a point on Sunday where the international team actually still had a chance. They started off really slow, but they were in a lot of those matches. And so I was kind of irritated too, because so many of those players for the international team actually were showing passion. They were playing good golf. And it wasn't like they just laid down and died. They showed a ton of heart. And they actually showed that they were really good golfers too. So I don't know. I like any Ryder Cup or President's Cup. I love it. But I thought that the press – was uncool to Trevor Immelman and that team for almost insulting them, like acting they would be so much better if all the people that didn't want to compete anymore and just wanted money to go play on the Live Tour didn't want to be a part of this.
Real talk here, Wayne, and not, I mean, I wanted to talk about the positives before I just kind of closed on this note. I have never been to a Ryder Cup, okay? I'm sure there is a different vibe there because of just what's happening, right? Like U.S. versus Europe. No disrespect to the international fans. I mean, there weren't very many of them. But as a spectator event, not great. Like, there's,
really?
Well, we were there during Thursday. And Thursday, Friday, Saturday, like,
yeah.
There's only golf on four holes, man. There's only five matches going on at once. So, like, it's tough to, you know, compared to, like, a normal full field event where you can go and post up and just watch 40 groups play the same hole if you wanted to.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it was cool, man. Like, look, I'm going to sound like a spoiled brat, so either way.
It
was great, but, you know, I wanted Serber to be able to, like, see more golfers than just the 10 guys that were out there.
He's right. He's right. It was fun, and I knew that, so, like, I took it with a grain of salt that, like, you know, that we were kind of having to try to stay ahead of this thing to be able to see anything, you know? Whereas if there was someone on all 18 holes, you know, they were going off at 7 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon.
Right.
It's all spread out, and you can see a lot more of the action.
I mean, wait.
So I get that.
I'm trying to butter you up for the U.S. Open next year, because it's in your backyard, man. It's an LACC.
Hook us up, dude.
If you want to put us up in the Casa del Cook.
You can stay here whenever you want to.
I mean, like, I'll bring eggs.
You guys
are family. I'll cook breakfast for you guys, you know? Like, I'll make some
bacon. Can you fly with eggs, Hartzell? Have you looked into that? You should check.
You know what? I think domestically you can. Yeah.
I think you can, too. You should check, though, because you know when you go to Missouri, right? Next time you're gonna have to take eggs.
Yeah.
Are family. You guys can stay anytime you want. So let's figure out a way. You gotta have some connections though and try and get us some tickets. I don't know if I do, But yeah, let's do it. By the way, if you're going to go to a Ryder Cup or
a
President's Cup,
freaking billboard. You're a Rose Bowl QB from UCLA. You're our connection, guy.
Captain 400
years
ago. Come on.
Hey, you guys got to go on Sundays to those matches, because then that's when they do the singles matches. That's why, and then you get to see more golf.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I thought it might be over before Sunday even started. So, yeah. I mean, I can't throw away a free pass, but it was just, it was cool to see my man Serber, who, you know, I said, first ever golf experience. This guy was, he was just in his element.
Wayne, I've been going low lately too. The game's been coming together.
Game's getting better?
The summer. Yeah, it's getting way better.
What's low for you?
I hit my new low was 105 that I did a few days ago.
So here's the deal, dude. I'm gonna tell you the truth about this. If you focus on your short game around the greens, you'll get in the high 90s.
That's where I've made my money. I've picked up 20 shots just from chipping better and putting better. 100%.
You really watch YouTube. There's tons of good instructors out there, and once you figure out like how to not, you know, because a lot of young golfers when they first start that. They'll three jack a lot of putts. When you start getting touch on the green, and by the way, every time you go to the course, it's cheaper to go putt than it. You don't always have to hit a bucket of balls. Bring two or three golf balls and just go chip and putt. And you can drive by on your way home. If you have a golf, I bet you do. At some point in time when you're coming home from work, there's a golf course that you can pull over and take 30, 40 minutes and just go chip and putt and then jump back in your car and drive home. Half the time your wife won't even know you stopped. It's just a quick way to cheat. I just said
a quick way to
get in some practice.
One of us.
Yes. So can we transition, you guys? I could talk about golf all day, but I have this analogy that I'm going to come up with. Have you guys ever heard of a rubric that teachers use?
The cube.
Do you guys a rubric? Not a Rubik's cube, but a rubric. it's something where they've told us teachers forever that if you have a rubric, in other words, it's like got the criteria for an A, got the criteria for a B, got the criteria for a C and a D and an F, and you read the paper or whatever the project is and you use the rubric. And they've told me for years that if you have a rubric, that it doesn't matter who's grading the paper, that they will all end up graded the same. I have always laughed at this. I mean, you do realize that all the people reading the rubric are human. Right. And we all have, some of us are nicer graders. Some of us are really strict. Like we've all had those evil teachers, right? When the evil teacher is grading it, he interprets the rubric much differently than someone else. This is what I say about ranking teams in college football. We all act like we have the rubric and we all ignore the fact that human beings are reading the rubric. And it bothers me beyond belief. What I'm so excited about when we switch finally to the 12 team playoff is that actually winning your championship is going to matter. Even if you lose a game or two, even if you start scheduling a really difficult non-conference schedule and actually aren't afraid, like my freshman year, we played Michigan and Tennessee in our first three games on the road. Both those games were on the road, 1991. I want that to happen again. There are some teams out there that are still doing it. And to be quite honest with you, when I see it, I'm like, why are these teams so stupid? Why would you schedule two really difficult games in your non-conference schedule? That does not benefit you at all in 2022. But it benefits the fans. This whole freaking rubric stuff of like, if we put these 13 people in a room and they watch every game, they're not going to be biased at all. They're just going to follow the rules and evaluate. That is so, it's almost like we're stupid if we believe that. So to me, getting back to who cares? Like the year I played in the Rose Bowl, we lost our first two games by 3 points to a ranked Cal team and to a team that ended up playing for a national championship in Nebraska. And we lost by 1 point against them. Should we be written off for the rest of the year? No, we won 8 straight and ended up beating our crosstown rivals. And we played in a Rose Bowl. Like to me, the idea of college football not being afraid to schedule big-time opponents, and sometimes more than one, and have these big matchups that we can all get excited about, but then not feeling like your season's over because you lost one of them, and you can go on. And then guess what? In sports, maybe if you get hot and get better as your season progresses, and you end up getting hot and winning a lot of games and find a way to get into the conference championship, you've still got a shot at a playoff. In every other sport, it's like that. But it hasn't been like that in college football. You can lose a game or two early in the season and you're written off. You've got no chance. So to me, I'm excited about the possibility of some of these changes. I think we should see some, like right now this week, we just went over this. So many of these games are so good because they're conference matchups. Wouldn't it be great to keep, I mean, because we had some good non-conference games, don't get me wrong, but we could have so much more, and it would make college football so much better.
So in that system, Wayne, you're okay with the 2-2 Miami team running the table in the ACC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they lost at home to Middle Tennessee State.
Doesn't matter.
Right. In your world, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because what happens as the season progresses, and let's just say there's that moment when your quarterback's, the light bulb goes on.
Right.
And he goes from being a guy, like I'll use a baseball analogy, that's batting, you know, 125 for the first 6 weeks of the baseball season and then bats like 350 the rest of the way. That could be what catapults you to a World Series. I mean, people get hot at the right times. Sports are amazing, and I know you hate it when I talk about the NFL, but like, who really cares what anybody's doing right now? I mean, I know you can get knocked out early because if you lose 2, 3, 4 games, I'm just going to be a battle. But we have wild card teams that have won Super Bowls before, and it's because so much happens. I know that in college football, it feels like Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia are always going to win it. But I don't know if you guys have noticed this. I just don't feel like the gap's as big this year. I feel like, you know, we watched Alabama struggle at Texas. It will be interesting to see what they do at Arkansas. We've seen that the transfer portal has actually changed college. You could bring up a team like Texas A&M and say that maybe, you know, they don't look good now, but they may, you know, maybe they're starting to play better. And with all that talent, those young players might end up being way better by the time we get to the end of the year. So to me, sports has always been about how you improve every week and how much better you get. And some of these teams, I mean, if you look at their schedules, there are teams that have already played 3 really tough games. And they might be sitting there at 2-2. And there's other teams that are 4-0 that have played nobody. And so to me, we should let it play out. And to be honest with you, are the teams at the top probably still going to be at the top at the end of the year? Probably, but they're going to be in the playoffs. But some of these other teams that maybe tripped up a little bit early that got hot. Remember last year's Utah team?
Yeah.
They didn't
figure
it out until
2-2, right? Or 1-2, I think it was.
And they started playing, Cam Rising. They found their quarterback, and then they just took off. And they went from a team that I don't think anybody really wanted to play at the end of the year, and they were really maybe not losing their quarterback and one of their defensive backs away from beating Ohio State. So to me, that's the perfect example. So, yeah, that's how I feel. I just don't think that we've gotten the habit of writing off teams so early. And I come from a different era, like where it was really hard for people to go undefeated, and I don't think there was as big of a gap between, say, 1-2 and 14-15. I think those teams, if they played, were like for example, the Alabama-Arkansas game. You know, that's the number 20 team versus the number 2 team. Like, I feel like in my era, and I'm not saying teams didn't blow teams out, but I would think that would be a huge matchup in a big game. And I'm hoping it is this weekend because of what I'm talking about. The whole deal with the transfer portal, I don't know it. I don't know if you guys feel this at all, but I feel like it's kind of made, even when you're playing, you know, schools that aren't in the Power 5, I think some of these schools are like, I was shocked when we played South Alabama and I was standing down on the field and I'm like, oh, excuse me, South Al. And we're standing down on the field. I'm like, who are these guys? Well, that guy transferred from this school. And they look like dudes. They were big and they were strong and they
were
fast.
Did it ever click in your head, Wayne, watching that like, holy cow, like these are the SEC's cast-offs. Like,
yeah,
these are guys
did.
Who didn't
it
cut
did.
It academically or it, got passed over or had to go the JUCO route, and so now they're here in FBS football, but it's from the same geographic footprint. Like, where have I seen this before? The first Saturday in December in Atlanta.
It is, but you also get the opposite of that. And you're right. You're getting some of these big-time 4-star recruits that maybe aren't quite good enough that are going to other places. And to be quite honest with you, it's not that they're not good players. They're really good players, but they may be playing behind a first-round draft pick. And so they're like, I don't want to sit here. I'd rather go somewhere else. So I agree with that. But then you're also getting players that are playing at lower-level schools that are good enough and got overlooked. And now they're transferring up, right? We've gotten 3 players in the last 2 years from North Texas. If you haven't watched UCLA football yet, we have the Murphy twins. And these two guys are studs, number 11 and number 12. They're 6'3" and built, and they're great off the edge. So there's players coming from, we've got transfers from Kent State. We've got transfers from some, but we've also got transfers from Alabama, and we've got transfers from Washington. As a matter of fact, we got a ton of transfers from Washington, and they're balling out. So like, you just never know where you can get players from now. And I think it's easier to kind of rebuild, and maybe the gap and the parity will level out over time. So that might be one of the positive effects from the changes that have happened over the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is happening with MAC schools in the Midwest. Like a kid will crush it his freshman year or sophomore year, and then he's portaling to, Purdue or Indiana or Iowa. It's happening. I mean, look, it's happening everywhere. In the Sun Belt. I mean, take the job Billy Napier did at Louisiana last year. He had like 5 kids, I think, go with him to Florida, just portal over to Gainesville and follow their coach. It's a thing, man. It's a thing. And you saw what Mel Tucker did at Michigan State. I mean, the guy built a double digit win team from the ashes because he just crushed the portal. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I understand the business decision for these kids. I mean, the free agency is here. It's not going anywhere. I think there needs to be more legislation, like you, Wayne. I'm not a huge fan of just the collectives running this thing. But the fact that you've got, if you've got 3 5-star quarterbacks in your room, you got to keep recruiting those kids. And I'm not saying you have to lie to them, but you have to entice them to stay, because there are other schools that are going to be dropping in those DMs. And those guys are going to have one eye on somewhere else if they're not getting playing time.
So listen, by the way, I just said I don't like paying them. Don't misunderstand what I just said there. I don't like paying kids as a way to get them to your school. Like, NIL is, I love what's happening with Bryce Young and the commercials that he's doing. I think that's awesome.
Bryce Young is making, according to reports, like $3.5 million this year in NIL.
The Heisman
money.
House, the whole, all the stuff he's doing, he's in that Fansville stuff. Like, that's what it was intended to be. If you're good enough for big time companies to offer you money to be in commercials, then why shouldn't you be allowed to do that? But to have boosters pay you to come to their schools and you're really not doing anything but maybe some stuff on social media, that to me, it goes against what college football is all about. But I agree with you. You know what? You want me to tell you? I'm going to get a little bit political here, but it's just for an analogy. The teams that are going to get hurt are the middle class. So if you look at the Power Five, and let's just say you're a middle of the road or even lower level Power Five team, and you're playing for Vanderbilt or Colorado or even teams that are a little bit better than that, and you have a great year, and it's you're sitting there playing on a team that you know is probably never going to compete for a championship, but you think you're good enough to go to a better school and a bigger school, you can do that, and you can transfer out. So it's going to be really hard for those middle class, Power Five schools to build. What if you're a player that's at those same schools and you're playing, but you're like, you know what? We suck and we lose all the time and I'm not getting to show what I can do. And then you might transfer to a, FCS school and go to a school that's kind of dominant. And the next thing you know, you're putting up big numbers and doing big things. So I worry about that world. I think it's going to be really hard for some of the middle class college football teams to not lose players both up if they have good years or down if they just want to go to a place where they feel like they can be more successful. So to me, those are the schools that you just wonder, how they escape it. Like, we were just at Colorado and Carl Durrell's in trouble, right? He's, his odds of holding on to that job are slim, but he lost a ton of players to the transfer portal. He's got almost all freshmen coming in, and then he's got to figure out a way when they're losing to keep them there. That's going to be a real struggle for a lot of these programs.
Yeah. No, I don't know how to fix that other than,
I don't either.
Make your school a desirable place for these kids to portal over to.
Yeah.
Did you not do your homework, Wayne, with the quarterback?
I did.
Assignment? Okay.
I'm on it.
I thought you were stalling because you just weren't ready because you wanted to do this segment.
Well,
I carve out this time for you, and instead you want to talk politics.
No, I wasn't. So let's do QB Spotlight or whatever the heck we're going to call it. And I am going to focus on the Friday night matchup. One of the things I looked at when I studied this is the ESPN QBR. I just think it's a little bit more detailed than just looking at stats. I think sometimes when we one of my pet peeves is I love it when someone looks at a modern day quarterback who runs 20 more plays a game because of all the hurry up stuff. They throw the ball a million times. I tried to think about this the other day. You know all the shallow crossing routes that they do?
Yeah.
That guys complete like a million a game, or all the quick like receiver screens that are just throwing the ball to the outside. We didn't really throw much of that when I was in school. So when you get quarterbacks that are completing 70-80% of their passes, it's a completely different game than I used to play. But even in the college football world of today, every quarterback plays in a different system. And so comparing quarterbacks based on stats, like, oh, this guy's thrown for, you know, 1,500 yards in four games. I'm like, yeah, but they throw the ball 70 times a game. I mean, it's just, it's not the same. For me, it's all about winning and how you manage your team. And so to me, when I look at the two quarterbacks that I'm going to focus on right now, and Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he's got a QBR of 84. That's number 12 in the country. He's completing 74.8% of his passes. Okay, he's also rushed for 170 yards on 21 carries, and he's averaging 8.1 yards per carry, and he's got two rushing touchdowns. His touchdown to interception ratio is 8-1. That's really good, and nobody's talking about him because, you know, everybody's just acting like UCLA hasn't played yet, and hopefully this week is a big game, and he'll have a chance to show people. But if you're not paying attention to him, when he's running the football, and you've got a running back like Zach Charbonnet, and I know nobody's talking about him either. He's been a little bit beat up, but he had like very few carries for over 100 yards.
Yeah, what's going on there, Wayne? I mean, I'm not asking you to break news, but is he just are they trying to save him for league play? What's going on?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think the UCLA coaching staff is pretty smart. He's been a little bit banged up for the most part. They've been using him sparingly because they know they're going to need him. I mean, this next part of this, he's a workhorse. He's the kind of guy that wears you down. I think he looked great against Colorado. You know, we stopped. We called off the dogs against Colorado in the third quarter. So he didn't get a lot of carries in the second half, but he could have had 200 yards and six touchdowns if he wanted it. But when Dorian Thompson-Robinson is keeping the ball on the zone read stuff and running, I'm telling you, you do not want to be a defense that has to deal with that. It's just very, very difficult. And then you throw into the fact that UCLA's got pretty good receivers too, and that's good. But Dorian is leading. He's fifth-year quarterback, which never happens in college football, but because of COVID, he's been there forever. He's got a ton of experience, and he's just playing great football. As far as Michael Penix Jr., we've talked about him plenty. He's just a little bit below on the QBR. He's down at 17 at 82.6. But this guy's 12-1 touchdown interception ratio. I was a little surprised at his running stats because they're not great. What he's done, and I've talked to you guys about this before, his throwing motion has always bothered me a little bit. And someone said that's just because he's a lefty. And I went, yeah, it's probably true. But he's got a cannon. He spins the ball really, really well. I was talking to my broadcast partner, Matt Stevens, and he's like, dude, have you seen the size of that guy's mitts? And for everybody out there that doesn't understand why we care about hand size so much, if you're an old quarterback like me, and I swear, I'm about 9, which is on the low end, right? I have a bigger hand than Kenny Pickett, but I'm on the low end, right? I wish my hands were bigger. If you put me out there with a peewee football, I am amazing. I'm serious. Like I can grip a small football, and I could put it wherever I want to. Some of these quarterbacks, man, I'm telling you, it's like, you ever remember seeing that really old picture of Julius Erving where, I don't know if you've seen this, but where he took both of his hands and he could touch his finger and his thumb around a football. Yeah. I mean, excuse me, around a basketball. Having big hands in sports is an advantage. But Michael Penix, I'm telling you, he just rips it. He's got a great arm. Kalen DeBoer is a great quarterback coach and a head coach. And this is another example of who you have as a coach matters a ton. And they're just ripping it around the field. So to me, I look at what he's done so far. He's completing 64% of his passes. And if you watch them, they're all dink and dunk. He's not afraid to throw downhill. Okay, and he's just been very, very accurate and very, very good. So I challenge everybody out there to tune in on Friday night. If you have a cup of coffee in the afternoon or have a few drinks if it's Friday night,
baby,
stay up and watch this Washington UCLA game. I think it's going to be a good one. And I will give one more shout out to the Kansas quarterback. I know we talked about it earlier, but in the QBR rankings, he's at number 1 right now. He's at 98. which is pretty amazing. He's 11-1 touchdown interception ratio, completing 71%. And he's also running the ball very, very well at 8.4 average, and he's got 4 TDs on the ground. And so I will say this, and I've always said this, can you guys know this about me? When you're a mobile quarterback, at some point in time when you're a mobile quarterback, you have to be able to complete passes. You cannot always rely on going off script because you just can't count on it. It's not sustainable. If every once in a while the quarterbacks will have a game where they scramble like a ton and they have like 150 yards and they end up, you know, winning a game, and it's like they're amazing. It's not sustainable. You have to do those types of things when the moment is right. But the rest of the game, you need to be on time. You need to be accurate. You need to be good on third down. You need to do all these things. And those three quarterbacks that I mentioned have been really good at that so far. So we're just going to have to wait and see. Now, as far as my not, you're going to love this. I'm going to go just because it's fun. I'm going to go with our man across town with the USC quarterback. Can I do that?
Caleb,
yeah. Can I do that?
Sure. Not a surprise at all. No, not a surprise at all.
Under 50%. Come on. I said 6-1 for the Heisman. Your first road game, your first tough test, and you complete under 50% of your passes. In the modern era of football, that's a bad game. So he's going to have to really bounce back. And by the way, I'm not saying Caleb Williams is a bad quarterback at all. I'm not. But I will say this. If you're truly in the Heisman hunt, is CJ going to have a game where they only score 17 points?
Probably not.
Is our man Bryce Young going to have a game like that?
Ohio State did score. Was it 17 or 24? I mean, week one, they scored 21. They scored 21.
Oh, it's Notre Dame, huh? They did do that, so I could be quiet there. But his stats were better. Either way, my point is he's going to have to recover for that. And there's plenty of other quarterbacks that have really struggled. But for now, we'll stay with the mostly positive. That was my little dig at USC. Granted, USC's undefeated and they're doing great, but you got to do better than 50%. You can't be that low in the modern era. And they're lucky to walk out of Corvallis with a win, 17-14, over a very game Oregon State. But you had the other team, like you pointed it out earlier, Stephen. Granted. You're saying you're relying on turnovers, that means you're doing something right because you're forcing those turnovers, but you would like to think that if Oregon State, maybe I should have gone with Chance Nolan as the quarterback. That's not.
Well, I think that it's an opportunistic USC defense. They are not an elite unit by any stretch. I mean, they deflect balls, they get sacks, they force fumbles. I mean, they are plus 14 turnover margin. I can't take that away from them.
But no,
you can still move the football on these guys. And I think they are susceptible. Back to UCLA and Washington real quick, Wayne. This is the last chance I get a chance. That's redundant. This is the last chance I have to talk to you between now and Friday night. I know you know this, buddy, but I'm just going to let our audience know who hasn't memorized the UCLA schedule. Home to Washington.
Yep.
Home to Utah.
Yep.
Bye week at Oregon.
Yep.
The next three games are the difference between having a nice season or a special season. I know you know that. But so, for the rest of our listening audience, okay? I mean, UCLA, unranked. I joked at Wayne. JMU's getting more votes in the AP Top 25 than they are. That changes if you handle your business on Friday night.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, as somebody who is an observer and a neutral party, the next three games, I mean, that's the season, buddy. That's it.
So we could look at every single team in the Pac-12, and they're all going to have a stretch of tough games. The great news about this year's schedule is that UCLA plays Washington and Utah at home. Those two places are two of the best stadiums in Pac-12 country, and so is Oregon for that matter. And that one is on the road, and I actually look forward to that one because that's a blast to be there. It's so much fun to be at that place. I've said this, and I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but UCLA's got to go. They've got to get two out of the next three. And I know that there are people out there that are sitting there going, "But you got to be just shut up." I don't want to tell people to go to the bad place, to the hot place when they die again, so I won't. But the idea is that, like, all of you that live in this world that everybody's just going to win all their games, holy cow. if you go and you win two of your next three, and let's say that third game is a dogfight that doesn't go your way, you're sitting there with one loss, and then this where it gets tricky. Then you're probably favored all the way up to the USC game. But then you've still got Cal sitting there at the end, and we talked to Phil about it. Cal's not a pushover. So this is what makes what the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world have done so amazing, or even Clemson in their heyday, so amazing. I mean, Clemson fans are so spoiled that 10-3 is like, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. Our quarterback's terrible.
Yeah,
that's an amazing record for most schools. So this idea that people are just going to stroll through. Remember, Alabama did not win, right? They lost to Georgia. You know what I mean? Like, schools are going to lose. Georgia lost to Alabama, right?
In the SEC championship game.
And then they beat them in the championship game.
Yes.
So whatever way it happened, they split those games. It's hard. And when you play back-to-back-to-back, and then you have a trap games, and then you have – like, we don't make this stuff up. Like, I pointed out two games that were middle of the road, like West Virginia and Texas. Do you think West Virginia and Texas are going to have a chance at maybe knocking off teams that are competing for a title? They are. They're good enough to do that. Do you think that Cal – I brought up the Cal game. Do you think that Cal and Washington State are going to have the chance to knock off someone down the stretch?
Apple Cup,
Arizona?
Baby. Apple Cup. Let's go.
Yeah. So to me, when I say two out of the next three, I hope it's all three. I hope it's not one out of the next two one out of the next three or not zero out of the next three. But this is a very tough part of the schedule. And most Power Five schools have that schedule. It's just hard, and you're always going to have a part of it where you have two, three, sometimes four games in a row that are just absolute disasters. And since UCLA's already played Colorado, there's not a lot left that's going to be a cakewalk. So you're going to have to be on it. And by the way, and I know we're getting close to time to end, what I think people don't realize either, and we've talked about this a lot, is the schools like Georgia and how many of you ever seen those charts they put out that shows how many 5-star, how many 4-star, how many whatever? Have you seen those that they put out on social media?
Like the
Georgia
rankings and stuff like that?
Like recruiting rankings. Georgia and Alabama have so many of those guys, it's scary. Like, so when they have an injury, a lot of times they're putting another 4 or 5-star guy in the lineup behind them. And then they've still got a 4-star guy behind that guy. Like, it's amazing how much talent they have. So when you talk about the gauntlet and the attrition of going through a long schedule where you play multiple tough games, some of these schools, because of the way they've been able to recruit, they just can weather the storm with injuries.
Yeah.
Some teams are elite and good enough as long as they're too deep or healthy. But as soon as they have to go to that next player down the list, there's a huge drop-off. And it doesn't mean that those teams weren't great when they had all their guys. They just don't have the depth. And so that's why those types of schedules, when you have multiple tough games in a row, it's just really hard for some of these teams because they don't have that many great recruits and they don't have the depth.
Yeah. No, that's well said, buddy. I mean, look, you handle your business for the next three games in which you will be – I mean, look, you're an underdog Friday night. You will be an underdog at home to Utah. You will be an underdog in Eugene. You find a way to win those three games, man. UCLA is sitting there in the top 10 at the end of October. That's a lot easier said than done. I realize that. But,
yep.
Yeah, you got your whole season in front of you, man. You're 4-0 for the first time in a while. Celebrate. You know, enjoy it. But all eyes are on you Friday night, baby. I'm ready.
Can't wait, man. I'm so pumped. You know, anybody said I've ever been around college football, you want to go to the big games. I've been to a Texas A&M game as a fan. I've been to a Notre Dame USC game as a fan. I've been to some of these big rivalries outside of, you know, obviously I go to all the UCLA games, but it's so much fun to be a part of a big game. And so to me, if you want big games, and we talked about it before, there's a great slate this weekend. Watch them. Just have a blast. I will be sitting on my couch all day on Saturday, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, you get to just put a dent in the couch on Saturday. Hopefully you're
after
hungover,
a big
too.
Win. After a big win.
Yeah,
if it doesn't go my way, I might be pouting a little bit, and I might be grumpy, but I'll still watch games.
Hopefully you stayed up all night partying. You just don't even go to bed. You just roll right into these 9 a.m. kicks out on
those
the West
Coast.
Those
days are over.
Oh, please.
Hey, you guys have little kids. You can't do that anymore.
Trust me.
Your kids do not care if you're hungover. You know that, right?
it is the worst, and it happened to me last week, and I was just like parenting hungover is the absolute worst.
It's the worst.
Like,
it's
I remember
you haven't learned that lesson yet?
No, of course I do. The days of going and working like a double shift, that sucked too, okay? I'm telling you guys, it's worse when there's kids. It's way worse.
It is.
It's not even close, because that headache never goes away, ever. And there's not enough Advil in the world that'll make that headache go away, because you know what? The questions, they keep coming. Folks, that's the show. Shout out to our man, Phil Steele. Thanks to him for joining us, for Serber, for Cookie. I'm Hartzell. The Phil Steele Show is the next thing that drops in this feed. And then our man Michael Felder stops by on Friday for a Felder Friday edition of College Sports Now. So we'll talk to you guys then. So long.